This is Macro Analytics, delivering frank conversations on global macroeconomics and market analysis outside the mainstream, featuring discussions and debates between Gordon T. Long, publisher and editor of GordonTLong.com, and his guests. The content of this discussion is strictly the opinion of the participants. It is in no way a solicitation for business, nor is it to be considered investment advice of any sort. Always consult a registered investment advisor before making any investment decision. These discussions are extremely hard-hitting and terribly frank, and parental discretion is advised. Now, on to the show.
Good morning. I'm Gord Long with GordonTLong.com. It's my pleasure to have back with me this morning Charles Hugh Smith, well-known and very prolific writer on the web, who is the publisher of the website Of Two Minds. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Gordon. Glad to be here.
It's always nice and how quickly the month goes, isn't it? Fast.
Yes.
So are you doing any camping?
Yes, I got into the redwoods of Northern California for one night, and that was wonderful. I highly recommend it.
You need more than one night
for
the hours that you put in. Charles, before we begin, I need to just mention to a lot of our listeners, this is not an interview. This is a discussion. Charles and I have been doing this for a number of years. We do it once a month. So it's not like all the other financial repression authorities where we're doing an interview. We're going to have a dialogue here. And this morning, the subject we're going to talk about, Charles, is what we refer to as, you and I, the coming era of pension poverty. And I thought what we'd do is try and address or try and answer two fundamental questions here that are on the table, and I have them up here now. You know, why are pensions and benefits promised to the public employees unsustainable? Why is that? We all kind of know it, but what are the real reasons here? And let's go through those. And then why is the Social Security system at risk? It stems obviously from the first question. So why don't we just get right into it, Charles? Why are pensions and benefits unsustainable?
Okay, well, there's three main dynamics here, Gordon. One is, of course, demographics. And what that means is the population is changed from when these systems were designed. And they were designed back when people lived generally into the mid-60s. Very few people lived beyond the age of 70. And they were also designed in a time when there was as many as 10 workers for every retiree. Well, over the last 40, 50 years, our lifespans have increased into the low 80s or mid 80s. We're living almost 20 years longer, and yet the number of full-time workers has dropped to 2 to 1. In other words, there's 115 million full-time jobs and 57 million people drawing Social Security benefits. So that's just an unsustainable ratio. Two full-time workers cannot support a retiree drawing Medicare and Social Security. Then the other factor is
that alone says it's not going to work.
Right, exactly.
And it requires massive, major overhaul right there. Never mind some of these other issues we're going to get into, but we're doing nothing about it, are we?
No.
Not a thing.
Those of us who are in our 50s and 60s remember that President Reagan, quote unquote, saved Social Security by raising the taxes. And the tax on the payroll tax used to be about 1.5% for an employer and 1.5% on the employee, you know, 3% total. Well, now it's 15.3%. So, but that's still not enough. So, unless you're going to double or triple those payroll taxes, the system is broken already, as you said, from demographics. The other factor is the Fed's financial repression, zero interest rate policy means very low yields. Most of the pension funds that the public employees are drawing upon are based on returns of 7% or more. That's back in the day, they figured that was a very safe, reliable figure. They could earn 7%. Well, that was when mortgages were 7, 8, 10%, and you could get 5.25% on a regular savings account. Well, now it's almost impossible to get a safe return above 3%. So there is no way these pension funds can earn 7% without taking on horrendous risks.
And that is why right now the public pensions in turn at the state and local level are $4.7 trillion underfunded.
Wow.
And the federal, at the federal level, it approximates $2 trillion, if not a little bit higher. And then, and we're just talking about public pensions here this morning, but then we have private pensions, which are probably pushing $3 trillion. We have close to $10 trillion underfunded with zero interest rate policy. How are they going to fix that problem, which is only getting worse every month? So right. This is a massive, massive shift.
And what are we told, Gordon, by the Fed? That we're in a low interest rate environment basically forever.
Right, for a sustained period of time.
Yeah.
And they're talking about, you know, whether the world will come to an end if they increase it by a quarter, because it'll collapse the collateral values and everything else. So let's say they push it up 0.5% with a lot of work over the next 5 years.
Yeah.
If you're a pension manager, what do you do? You
hasn't fixed your problem.
You hadn't fixed your problem. So you're out there on the risk curve. So pensions today are not riskless. They're for widows and orphans. Pensions have become highly risky if you're lucky enough to have one. So if you're a public service employee and you say, I got a pension, I don't have anything to worry about, I'll say, wait until, they'll see the color of their eyes. Wait until you see the green. Because in 5 years from now, 4 years from now, where is it coming from?
Right. And we've had, apparently, the fund managers have been pushed by the Fed into risk on assets, right? Well, that's paid off for the past few years. It looks like it's a strategy that's going to work. We haven't yet had a downturn. We haven't had a recession. When that happens, the whole picture changes.
Charles, exactly. We've had this incredible boom, but I just quoted the numbers of how underfunded they are.
Right,
This is after the boom. Now, what happens if we have another downdraft and it gets worse? And then, it's harder to make the money back from a lower amount with even great. They've had the best percentages in the equity markets, and they have moved from bonds to equity, and the bond market has been another bubble, and they're still not there.
Yeah, exactly. There's no way this is going to catch up if these great returns aren't enough. And speaking of risk, Gordon, we need to mention that the private sector, as we've discussed in the past, the defined benefit plans are a thing of the past, right? So that means the risk of managing your nest egg for retirement has been shifted to the individual, the individual with an IRA or a 401k. Well, that individual has the same problem as the fund manager. Where are they going to grow their money, to even keep up with inflation? And so there's no easy answer for that. And so the individual is also being pushed into these very risky assets that they're being told are safe, right? The stock market.
The whole premise was, and they've argued for years, that the retirement should have a three-legged stool. It should be your Social Security. It should be your company, your worker, whatever your worker pension was, if you had. And then it should be your private savings that you save for that rainy day in retirement. Okay. We see a problem with the public pension, with your pension, your Social Security, which is, then you say, well, what about your own pension? Well, nobody's got one anymore. They're gone. They went from defined to contributory, and there's no money. And if you look at the contributory pensions, Charles, right now, there's an average of $18,400 per 401k. How long can you be retired on $18,400 as an average dollar? Not even half a year, I suspect, or a year. Yeah. Never mind people who are thinking they're going to get pensions of $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year and whatever they paid it. So that's disappeared. Okay, so I saved my $500,000 or $1 million, and what am I getting on it?
Right.
So what's happened today is it's just disintegrated. And that's why we call this pension poverty, because where are you going to, you're going to have to work. And the problem with the having to work, and we were talking about this just before the show, is that does everybody understand the taxation associated with the pensions? And your pension right now, if you were on your Social Security, if you are to make over $33,000 a year, it's taxable at 55%. And if you make over $44,000, it's taxable at 85%. Poverty line is about $30,000, isn't it? You're trapped. And so if you're lucky enough to have some other income, so people are going to be forced back to work, but they're going to be capped. And I just don't think people understand the magnitude of this problem. And certainly our politicians aren't talking about it. Does that make sense to you, Charles?
Yeah, and it was news to me, Gordon. I didn't understand the incredibly high tax rate on your Social Security benefits if you're drawing benefits from other sources.
Correct.
And then we also need to mention, we've talked in the past programs about the end of work. It's the economy is not generating another 10, 20, 30, 50 million jobs, you know? So in fact, it's the number of full-time jobs is eroding as they're replaced with software automation and part-time jobs. And so the ability to go out and earn enough money to retire is being crimped as well. So it's not like the economy is generating tens of millions of jobs. It's actually losing jobs due to automation and software and the other issues we've talked about in the past. So for a payroll-based system, payroll tax-based system, that's the kiss of death. So let's also mention real briefly here that, you know, in the public pensions, that this used to be back in the 60s, and I have many family members who were teachers and firefighters and so on in the 60s and 70s. The public pensions were very modest. You went to work for the government at a relatively low rate of pay, and you had a modest pension, but you had a very secure job, and this was the trade-off that was made. Well, now the public unions, like any other vested interest, have gained tremendous political power because they've donated a lot of money to, you know, Democratic politicians. So now they can retire with 90% of their base pay at 55, many of the union members. And then the system is easily gamed. Like, I just had a note from a reader in Michigan. The pensions, the public pensions there, are based on your last 6 months of service. That's supposed to be 850 hours. Well, all your buddies go on sick leave, you get overtime, and then your pension.
They absolutely cram all the overtime
right
in the last period of time. There's all sorts of games they do to push it right up.
Right.
So then, and you know, they're just playing the game. Then they retire, then they come back on contract as a consultant and double dip on this thing.
That's right. And so
now, Charles, here's what it goes back to. I was just saying about the limitations on taxation, on Social Security, et cetera. It's different taxes for public service. The unions have negotiated brilliantly. Who is negotiating for the rest of us? Our elected politicians in Washington?
Right.
And guess who got the short end of this one? And guess who's going to pay for it all?
Yeah. And speaking of paying for it, you know, let's walk through those trillions of dollars we're short. Now, the public unions are going to demand of their representatives, who they basically bought and own, you guys have to raise the money to pay our pensions. You know, if the returns aren't good enough, then you're going to have to raise taxes. That's the way it is. You promised us we want it. Well, what about the voters? What about the homeowners, the people who are supposed to pay these higher local taxes, state, county, city taxes? Where is the money going to come from when their incomes are stagnant? And we've covered this in depth in previous programs. Basically, wages are the same as they were, adjusted for inflation, 40 years ago. So every tax dollar that's squeezed out of a homeowner or a worker is going to mean they're going to have that much less money to spend in that local economy. So the snake is eating its tail. You're going to have a recession because disposable income is going to decline, spending is going to decline, marginal businesses are going to close, and taxes are actually going to drop. So the more they raise taxes to cover the pensions, the more recessionary pressure they create.
Exactly. And the games that, you know, I just went through a discussion with Ms. Shedlock about the state of Illinois, and I'm sure you were reading it. What
yes.
they're doing is they're going out and floating bonds, which are supposed to be for infrastructure investment, and they're using it to pay operating expenses, and over 50% of the money in taxes is going to pay interest and pension plans numbers. So they're having to strip out all of the operating costs to support the infrastructure. It's just this huge graft, and one city after the other is facing it. And so when you get down to the local town level, mm-hmm. and up, the only tax they have is property taxes.
Yes.
And so the big push is clearly going to be, going forward, is property taxes, the value of your real estate. And their taxes are already going up in a major way, because a lot of them were pay-go, pay-as-you-go. So
That's
they
right.
didn't put money aside for somebody to retire. I think I've mentioned in a previous show, I live in a small town, New England. We have 3 chief of police, 2 fire chief, and 55 constables. Pardon? Well, turns out we really have 16 constables and one of each. The rest are now retired. But we have to now pay them. So costs are going through the roof, right?
Right.
So what are we doing now? Well, we're not finishing the roads. We're not cut schools. Got leaky roofs in the high school, etc. They don't know what to do. Now, the states are floating bonds, but the towns have got another problem. So so it's going to come at property taxes. It's going to go through the roof.
Right.
Maybe the millennials who aren't buying houses have figured this out.
That's right. And speaking of pay-go, that's what Social Security is too. And I've found a lot of delusional thinking about Social Security, and maybe you have too from your readers. People sort of read about this trust fund, and they think the trust fund is real. In other words, that the government has $4 trillion or whatever it claims to in an actual marketable security it can sell to pay the Social Security benefits. No, all it has is a worthless IOU. So
actually, Charles, what it has is a U.S. Treasury bill. It's a bond. So it's debt that's unclaimable because they don't have the money to pay it.
Yeah.
But it's just basically a big IOU sitting there in a security, but not in a publicly traded security.
Right. And what we've got is Social Security is already running about an $80 billion deficit. And that's just the baby boom has barely started to move into the system. So if we're already running an $80 billion deficit, it's going to balloon. And you have some charts that we'll share that show that. So where is that money going to come from? Taxes? If you raise taxes, then you're going to create a recession almost instantaneously. And your taxes are actually going to decline as economic activity declines. So there's no, you can't raise taxes to solve the problem because incomes are stagnant.
So why is Social Security at risk then? Besides the obvious here.
Well, I think it's at risk because the demographics are completely unsustainable. You know, only two workers for each retiree. The tens of millions of people are going to be retiring and entering the system. And because incomes are stagnant, then you can't raise taxes because people don't have enough money to pay another 10% in tax and continue their consumption, which is of keeping the economy afloat. And then another issue we have a slide on here is the number of disabled people or people claiming to be disabled, and there's a lot of controversy about that. That number has ballooned by millions. There's now, 8 point some million people on Social Security. It was supposed to be the last ditch if you were injured at work and you didn't have sufficient workers' compensation in your state. You could then go on disability from Social Security, but people are obviously gaming that system to the tune of millions and millions of people. And it's never revisited. That's the problem with Social Security disability. If you say you have a sore back or whatever, and then you get Social Security, they never check and see, well, did you get better and now you're able to work? It's like lifetime. And so is that a good system? I don't think it is. But whether it's a good or bad system, I don't think it's sustainable. You know, having 57 million people already drawing benefits and 115 million people paying into it. It's not sustainable.
And as you said, that's at this current level of incomes.
That's right.
To even sustain the level of taxation and against real disposable income. So there's a wall we're going to hit very, very, very soon. And it reminds me of the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme. Charles, I don't mean to be negative. This is a Ponzi scheme. There's no other way to describe it. It's a classic, actually. And our government is culpable here because they know what's happening. They just don't. And in their defense, they don't know how to fix it.
Right.
Because there are no pensions anymore. They don't. Right. And they can't. They don't have the money in the taxation. Where'd all the money go? And I've lived in other countries before I came to America. And the reason you had taxation was so that you had a pension, that you had health coverage, and you had education. Well, we don't pay for education down here. It's went through the roof. We don't pay health care. Even Medicare, when you finally get there, you're going to learn some real lessons that I've seen. And we're just talking about pensions in terms that they don't exist in Social Security. So, okay, where's all the tax money gone? Gone. Not just going, gone.
That's right.
That's the real question that needs to be, because you go through Scandinavia, Europe, Scandinavia, you know, all these programs are in place, and that's how they've funded, they have funded them. I didn't say they don't have problems, but there's literally tens of trillions of dollars that's disappeared somewhere. Maybe possibly a military infrastructure where we have 600 military bases around the world is something like the Roman Empire. It's no longer sustainable. Is that a possibility?
Absolutely. And so is healthcare sucking off 18% of the gross domestic product. That's twice as much money per capita as other countries spend. So yeah, you have these huge programs that are spending hundreds of billions a year, and they're just no longer sustainable. And that's the illusion that we're trying to poke a hole in. It's just not gonna work.
So the real question to me, Charles, is this is obvious, and I think most of our listeners would say there's nothing really new, other than maybe we're all getting older and we should be a little bit more worried about it. But why is Congress not even willing to talk about it? George Bush said it was a priority during his presidency and got nowhere. Obama tried, got nowhere. Every president, I think even Clinton was trying and got nowhere. So it's not like our presidents haven't already identified the seriousness of the issue, but everybody just swept it under the carpet. So we have a fiduciary failure of our leadership, and I'm not talking about president, I'm not talking about party, I'm talking about elected officials who we entrust to work on solving these problems for us, who aren't.
That's right.
I mean, what other purpose do they have? This is pretty, and they're just ignoring. So what I'm really wondering what they're doing for us, and I don't mean to be that cynical.
Right. No, you're absolutely right, Gordon. And just to kind of wrap it up, what we're talking about is the pension poverty, meaning that the pensions that have been promised to, you know, hundreds of millions of people are not payable in the current system. And the deficits between what have been promised and what's possible is in the trillions, right? The deficits. Yeah.
If you read your Social Security statement, they've put in for numbers of years, they've said that these are what might be possibility, but they disclaim it, that they don't feel that these are commitments.
Right.
And you read it, it's very, very clear. So they've been, I don't know how long that's been in now, 10 years, but they've said, no. This is an assessment, but there's no guarantees you'll ever get anything.
And as you've pointed out, if the pensions you do receive are taxed at a very high rate, then the actual pension you receive net could be a lot smaller than you anticipate.
Oh, it will be, because over the next years with inflation, you're not going to be able to get by on $33,000 a year. You're just not. So you're going to be out there working, and they're going to want 55% of the pension back because you're making over $33,000 a year. And then if you really hit the enchilada and you're making $44,000, 85%.
No, that's devastating.
And by the way, it's enchilada. That's probably what you're serving over at Taco Bell's.
No, it's a devastating rate of taxation or clawback, if you will.
And it's going to get worse. Charles, it never goes down, it gets worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, the taxation rate may be increased, but not at the rate of inflation. And so, and you got no out, and when you're older, you don't have the limited jobs, and the jobs are going to be limited. Pensions and our retirement and the era that we think of are gone. And as I said earlier, even if you have a pension, pensions used to be invested in for widows and orphans. Today, pensions are high-risk propositions because of the risks they're taking. So if you think you've got a pension and you're all right, think again. And there's a lot of people in the private sector who suddenly found they had no pension when it was taken to court because the company went out of business. And the governments are they're no different, right?
Right.
So it's a new era, and it's clear as a bell. We just don't know when it's going to arrive. So the message to our listeners is think long and hard about retirement and what it really means. And having a job and steady income is something you want to hold on to, because that check may not be there as long as you think once you quit and think it's coming in from your pensions. And it may be a check, but what amount of it are you going to be able to keep?
That's the key question.
Any closing message, Charles, as we wrap here?
Just a mention that, as always, the only protection that I see is to own assets that you control. In other words, not a mutual fund that's in the hands of Wall Street gamblers. It's something that you own. That's like timber, land, rental housing, a small business, a trade, you know, something that you control and that can't be taken away as easily as, you know, your Social Security pension can be taxed.
Could you tell our listeners how they could follow more of your work and your site and your readings?
Well, please visit me at oftwominds.com.
Charles, talk to you again next month.
Okay. Thank you, Gordon.
This has been Gordon T. Long, editor and publisher of GordonTLong.com. New recordings are posted regularly and can be found at GordonTLong.com. New show notifications are available through RSS feed, iTunes, and other social networking venues at GordonTLong.com.